The point is amply illustrated by some of the reports from the lower levels. But instead of stepping into the rather depressing realms of the lower human condition, let us consider the creative principles in the higher dimensional regions where the majority of decent people will reside after they have laid any of their demons to rest, which they may have carried over from their physical life. With negative fixations gone, people are more inclined to focus on the positives such as realizing their lifelong dreams. We will find that the most predominant creative forces at work are the subliminal ones that we don't necessarily even notice in everyday life. For example, if we take happiness, love and joy, not only will these take us to a much more beautiful and abundant reality environment, but we will also subtly transform it by our mere presence. If we were to meet a friend we hadn't seen for a while, the vegetation around us may assume brighter colors or sprout blossoms, especially if we were to offer or receive kindness. Most importantly, our appearance will be affected. We will look younger, healthier and more attractive, something I noticed when reuniting with my mother, as mentioned in earlier reports. Our clothes will be more attractive and we will literally radiate positivity. This radiation will not be so much apparent on the level which is in tune with our feelings, but if we happen to visit a lower and darker level we will stand out like a torch and the inhabitants of that level might even regard us as a messenger from a higher plane or an angel. These changes don't have to be unnoticeable or gradual, they can be quite sudden. Here is a quick example. I was traveling over a shallow lake, about 4 feet above the surface, observing the multitude of colorful fish playing in shoals in the crystal clear waters. As I took delight in their play they responded positively by brightening their colors, increasing the movements or jumping out of the water towards me. In the distance I saw a row of 5 houses, nestled against the lake. The one that attracted my attention had a veranda and the whole front of the house was wide open. There were pots of flowers in abundant bloom everywhere on the small terrace, which made an impression like a photo taken for a holiday brochure of a country retreat. I saw a lady sitting in an armchair in her front room looking out to the lake. As I got closer, she spotted me and smiled. I took this as an invitation to come and see her and perhaps chat to her. So I landed politely, if there is such a thing as a polite landing, 3 meters away from her on her open porch. I am only temporarily here, I informed her, and I am quite curious how you folks here live. I figured that out already, she responded with a smile. She asked me to take a seat on one of the 4 comfortable chairs surrounding a low table covered with a beautifully crafted lace cloth. She had an object in her lap which I took for a book at first, but then recognized it as a craft item that I could not readily identify. I looked around and admired her tastefully decorated home. The furniture was antique, with old-fashioned paintings on the walls and richly decorated china vases displayed on a long sideboard filled with lush bouquets of flowers. The opposite wall of the room from the terrace was also wide open, giving a view to her back garden, which was really a courtyard as it was hemmed in by 2 extensions of the house on either side. I identified these as a bedroom to one side and a study to the other. The whole courtyard was completely covered in yellow flowers, which grabbed my attention and took my breath away because of their radiant bloom. I congratulated her on the visual feast to the senses. Not only was I dazzled by the show of color, but also by the rich perfume. She told me that her little retreat was compensation for the hard life she had left behind and that she needed this to focus on all the beauty life has on offer, instead of mulling over the past. I was intrigued by her story, but she did not give anything away. I could not see behind her words into her soul, which was a skill I had developed on this level in recent years. It was as if she had erected a wall to prevent prying eyes. She must have read my questioning expression, but also sensed that I respected her privacy and was not going to press her into disclosing anything to me. She then changed her mind. I can see you are a trustworthy soul. Yes, I had a hard life. She then confessed that she had been cheated out of her life's savings by a crook she had mistaken for a lover, how her heart was broken when he disappeared and how from then on her life had fallen apart. She became ill, no longer left her house and neglected her social life. As she was telling her story, I saw sadness discoloring her face and removing her pink complexion. Lines started to appear and she visibly changed right in front of my eyes. The most astonishing thing I had ever experienced was that the flowers in her courtyard all suddenly began to wilt and die. She then told me that she couldn't find it in her heart to forgive this man and what he had done to her. Her face flushed up red and her wide open eyes gleamed with a sudden burst of anger. Simultaneously, the flowers in her backyard shot back into life again, but this time they were bright red blooms, with coal black rims around each petal. All the plants were at least a foot taller than before, but I could clearly feel they were sculpted by menace. I was shocked by her sudden change in emotion and struggled to take in all the changes taking place around me. I could clearly feel her sense of betrayal and experienced powerful sympathy and an instinctive urge to comfort her. This took immediate effect and she calmed down. Her face relaxed as she closed her eyes. She seemed to be taking a few deep breaths and I continued pouring love and sympathy towards her. She soaked this up until a smile began to settle on her lips, which showed a return of the cherry red they were before. The lines in her face smoothed out. Most surprising was that the room became much brighter, even brighter than before I arrived, and when I looked into her courtyard, the bed of flowers was once again transformed with multicolored blossoms, juxtaposed in different vibrant sizes, blues and violets, brilliant whites and yellows of all different kinds. A gentle breath made them sway and carry their sweet aroma right into the room. For a moment longer, the lady of the house sat there, her chest heaving with her breath, her left hand placed on her heart. She then opened her eyes and smiled at me. "Thank you for your love." At that moment she said those words, I could feel nothing else, only love. "Sometimes," she said, "heaven sends its messengers and angels to make things good again. So thank you." When I departed, I wasn't sure what had surprised me the most, the sudden transformation in the environment in response to strong and powerful emotion, or the strength of my own feelings and the effect they appeared to have on her, so much so that she blatantly mistook me for a heavenly visitor. I now know more about the subliminal power each one of us wields just by showing an act of kindness when we are not even aware of it. I also learned how dynamic non-physical reality is, more so than I have ever heard being reported in current literature. We have to learn to live with our feelings and emotions as well as with our memories. Nothing remains hidden and is only an attention span away. I considered the effect the woman's lover had set in motion and what was clearly going to come towards him as a result, the moment the filters of the physical nervous system had been removed. I could see a dark vestibule of emotion irreversibly engraved into the infinite memory store of consciousness and the filaments of it being permanently attached to this woman's former lover, ready to pour its painful content all over him. I was glad to observe that she needn't take an active part in this. She was free to reside in her little cottage by the sea and watch the fish in the crystal lake and the flowers in her garden cycling through different colors to follow her moods and feelings. One day, inevitably, this man would call out for her after suffering the wrongs of his selfish action with the same intensity as she had experienced when her life disintegrated as a result. He would then embark on the long struggle to find rescue and forgiveness. That day was inevitably looming and impossible to avoid. I had observed this very personally myself with my mother's second husband, who had kept her away from all her friends when she became disabled as a result of a stroke, because of his rampant jealousy. My mother kept herself away from him for years after death, with him imprisoned by his jealousy in a dark place until I found out quite recently that she had softened somewhat and had forgiven him. To many people who have made victims out of their fellow beings, the way out of their predicament seems closed, because they rarely consider the kind of mindset needed to break them out of their entanglement hell. In physical life, we often find that so-called bad people, who have had an epiphany and have seen the error of their ways, sometimes enter a life of service to others, like hardened former criminals sometimes teaching in schools to tell children to stay out of gangs, or simply decide to help the disadvantaged. Devoting your life to the service of others is the straight road to redemption. If this simple knowledge could be shared or taught in prisons and rehabilitation centers, we would find that past crimes and misdemeanors could ultimately be a force for good in our society. Most people who have embarked on a life of service, either on physical reality or the non-physical, have a preference for keeping a low profile and not drawing too much attention to themselves, because they often feel that is a distraction from their task at hand. In some cases, this may be unavoidable and they will perform their task with humility. On the non-physical level, we have the ability, too, to cover our inner brightness so as to not attract too much attention. One method is by not assuming a material focus and remaining invisible on that dimension. The other one is to actively manifest to disguise from the vibrational material of the reality level we find ourselves in. This method is often used by the numerous helpers on the lower levels in order to blend in and not divert attention from the obvious task at hand. We are best served by connecting to our heart, empathy and compassion, and to the free flow that comes from a much higher state of consciousness. In this way, we become a link to a divine energy that will purify us and bring light into everything we do. The liberation and feeling of freedom can be powerful and overwhelming, and we are no longer tied to the entanglements of our past action. Just as in the case of service offered in our world, in our creative aspiration as well, we follow very similar links. If we wish to express our creativity, perhaps manifest objects or pictures or other works of art and music, we are best served by calling on the inner qualities of the heart. Instead of manifesting via an effort of will, we should manifest by a focus on natural attraction and a link of love to the innermost energy residing in the heart. Our work happens in harmony with higher creative powers, which will weave all the finer detail into our work, once we put our intention on the general form. This can be a process with many levels, beginning with our intent and then surrendering ourselves completely to the inner creative flow. Our unique character provides the instrument through which the inner flow manifests and expresses itself into a unique work of art and manifestation. At any stage, we may reset our focus and let the creative stream take care of the detail. This is the most powerful way of working and also the most rewarding one, whether we are dealing with living things or objects of creation. As a result of this process, we will find on the much more refined non-physical reality planes works of unimaginable beauty and richness, with whole cities being created and crafted in this manner, enhanced by the consensus of the many and the most creative and passionate minds and hearts. These places are true wonderlands, with new surprises around every corner. I have frequently found that large parts of these places are not even fully inhabited, because the occupants are often too busy to try and manifest new environments which are literally inexhaustible. The 20th of May 2009, fellow travelers and art of clairvoyance, it was 4:45 a.m. when I woke up. As I was wide awake, I decided that my time would be better spent by retreating into my meditation room for an early morning practice. After about an hour of meditation, I began to feel tired and decided to return to bed, but with a strong resolve of attaining lucidity as soon as my body succumbed to sleep. Almost as soon as the first dream image of a wide open plain appeared, I became aware that this was a dream and that all I had to do was focus my attention on an object to disrupt any possible dream content from emerging, then establish myself on another dimension. As I looked down onto the ground in front of me, I saw the grass and the dirt in great detail. The fact that I also saw litter instantly told me that I was in a dimension immediately adjacent to the physical. I recognized it too by the atmosphere, and it felt that it was only the width of an atom between this world and the familiar physical one. In recent years, my confidence in determining the dimension I have found myself in has become very accurate, though without actually determining their material difference. This was not something that would allow me to assign a numbering system to it, but it was more a recognition of a subjective familiarity or intuitive feeling I recognized. Here, The kind of random details were simply an indication of their close proximity to the physical. For a moment I pondered how physicists might view this. Future scientists who have shaken off their belief that we live in a universe of just one dimension will find determining how different dimensions are stacked within one another the next massive challenge, against which finding the Higgs boson particle will appear like child's play. Now here again, in this alternate reality, I had the compelling awareness that many people who had found themselves here might not even have considered the possibility that they had died. There was simply nothing externally that would allow us to tell our two worlds apart. This was such an Earth-like environment. When looking around, I decided that this scene held little attraction. Why should it? It was simply like being awake on the physical level. I thought of ways of raising my consciousness in order to lift myself into a higher dimension. To do this, I used my simple chant and I was almost instantly airborne and dumped onto the high point of a cliff, which was populated by a small group of people enjoying a magnificent view over a bay. Right next to me was a young woman of about 25 with light brown hair and a casual summer dress. She radiated a different energy, so I addressed her, "Excuse me. Please, are you a permanent resident or a night visitor like myself?" She turned towards me with a cheery smile and told me that she was a visitor like myself. "But are you conscious and lucid, or do you think this is a dream?" I wanted to know. "No, I am fully aware that I am out of my body just like you are. Isn't this just fantastic?" Her enthusiasm was infectious. I was thrilled at having found a fellow OB explorer and quickly considered its possible implications. I abandoned my plans of rising into a higher level. It is relatively rare to bump into a fellow out-of-body traveler, and I suggested that we could explore this world together and perhaps figure out a way of contacting each other when returning and then comparing our notes. This could be a powerful way of establishing veridical proof. For a moment I thought she would agree. But then she told me that she had other plans, that there were people she had to go and see and that she didn't get many opportunities like this to take advantage of. I was smitten by her charm and how attractive she looked and wished her good luck, but I was also disappointed. I then took to the air and went on a prolonged excursion, taking note of the places I sailed past. I was distracted by the auras of the houses, which I had never noticed before. Houses have auras and a subliminal colored glow and an atmosphere, which allowed me instantly to know all about the people who lived there. My newfound clairvoyant perception, which enabled me to read the inner life of everything I passed, was too novel to be exchanged for an uncertain destiny into a higher dimension. In the course of my journey, I visited restaurants and even joined a family party, mixing with the locals and asking plenty of questions in order to find out more about the lives of the dead. It was only when two young women giggled, looking down at me, that I became aware that I was still wearing my dressing gown. Unfortunately, it was this that made me wake up in my bed. Without opening my eyes, I memorized what I had seen. There was no interesting narrative to my experiences, only a number of acute observations about non-physical reality that would allow me to substantiate existing facts and add new ones. There were a number of things which filled in the blanks of my knowledge of the afterlife. Rehearsing my observations and memorizing them would help me when writing them down on my return to physical awareness. For the time being, though, I was keen to return and, not moving a muscle and keeping my attention in check, I knew that all I had to do was to focus on the knocking sound inside my head, which told me that I was about to enter another altered state of consciousness, and I was able to carry on from where I was. This is what happened. Knowing the wealth of information that can be gained by interviewing the permanent residents, I was intent on finding the right people whom I could question. The way this works is that when talking to people, they inadvertently supply plenty more information than their simple words. You become privy to all their background information, and instead of just listening to their words, you act as a receiver to the mental pictures they create as they talk. This kind of clairvoyance is a tremendous bonus that allows me to travel to places which, on my own, I would not even have considered. For example, I talked to a man who had been a lorry driver when alive, and for a period of time he still was a lorry driver over here until he switched vehicles. As he was telling me this, not only did I get a clear picture of the color of his lorry and the sports car he swapped it for, but I was also privy to the regions he had visited and all in clear, colored 3D images. On top of that, without his mentioning this to me, I knew he was frequently seeing his mother and uncle who were also here. I knew what house they lived in and what their garden was like without even seeing them or his mentioning their name. In real life I am not clairvoyant, but out of body I seem to acquire a set of extrasensory perceptions. It is much easier for me now to appreciate how gifted clairvoyants work. At one point, my eagerness for research got me into troubled waters, when I quite innocently gate-crashed a party and started antagonizing a member of the group by asking questions. The man I confronted held his outstretched hand towards me and sent me some unpleasant vibes. I felt embarrassed and apologized, then decided it was time to leave and instead focused on raising my consciousness so I could enter a higher level. Unfortunately, it was too late. The effect of this little hostile intervention had sapped some of my energy and instead I tumbled downwards and woke up. I then also recalled other events, so typical for the astral plane, which I had not even entered into my journal, how the environment responds to our feelings. Walking along a lonely path, which appeared to be at dusk out in nature, I recalled a place that simply could not be identified. I took in the strange colors of the vegetation and how the feelings that percolated through me subtly changed the environment with its outlandish reddish greens, which I had never before come across, hues that simply don't exist on our planet. I had also noticed a melancholy, which I was sure I had never experienced on this physical earth, simply because there was not the same range of feelings. The melancholy was perfectly reflected in the environment, in the subtle mists which rose from the silent stream running beside me, mist made of colors which had no equivalent I was formerly ever aware of, and the eerie feelings these colors evoked inside me. I was humbled by the vastness of this alternative dimension, which was able to offer new experiences in emotion, feeling and vision simply unobtainable within our worldly consciousness. The 6th of March 2010, the directors of Cartoon City having been booked for a talk on Obies, I felt it important to get fresh input, rather than relying on old experiences. So I got up at 4:30 a.m. to use the wake-up back-to-bed technique in order to achieve a lucid dream, which I would then try to convert into a full out-of-body experience. After filling in time for 20 minutes, reading and doing various things to wake myself up, I retreated into my meditation room, where I practiced my sutras. This is a technique I have adapted to raise my consciousness. My intention was to travel into a higher dimension to gather information about the multi-dimensional structure of the universe. The talk organizer had asked me to draw up a graph for a talk he was giving. I did achieve lucidity shortly after I returned to bed and dropped off to sleep. As soon as I entered a dream, I became lucid, but had difficulty controlling it. I spent most of my time struggling to achieve full waking consciousness. By staring at my hand, I gradually cleared my mind and became fully lucid. I was horrified to discover that I had entered a world populated by life-sized 3D cartoon characters milling around in a cartoon town. I was irritated considerably, thinking that I was still in some sort of lucid dream state, and tried to figure out a way of piercing this illusion in order to arrive in a consensus reality. I needed to be absolutely certain that this reality was not a mental projection or fantasy. I tried various techniques, such as the command clarity now and staring at the ground. It was of no avail. The characters, stiffly animated cartoon men and women with drawn-on cloths and painted facial expressions, were walking around all over the place like spooky robots. Staring at the scene and intending to dissolve the illusion had no effect whatsoever. I was darting between them, over streets with painted cobblestones and painted-on pavements. There were a number of shops as well. Some were brightly lit, others wide open, all beautifully hand-drawn, but I was the only live person in the strange cartoon world. Inside some of the shops were giant cartoon TV screens, and on the screens cartoon animations of action heroes were playing. By now I couldn't help but admire the craftsmanship of the animation, which was in black and white and exceedingly stylishly executed. I was tempted to stay and watch, but was only too aware that my purpose had been to raise my consciousness and try to enter a higher dimension, with the aim of ascertaining more knowledge about the nature of that reality. I was trying to find my way out of this comic world and aimed towards the end of the road, where I could see some real workshops and two men busily operating controls that were quite flat, like clipboards. They were busy moving their fingers across it, and, as I got closer, I noticed that these two men were in charge of the artificial cartoon world I was just escaping from. They smiled broadly at me as I approached. "Are you in charge of this?" I asked. "Yes," was the answer from one of the men. He had short blonde hair and was wearing jeans. The other guy was still busy controlling his character and barely acknowledged me. "So this is not my dream then," I concluded with relief. "No," the blonde man replied, "this is our dream. We created this town and the characters. Do you like it?" It was only now that I could relax and admit that I was clearly impressed by their accomplishment. What was most impressive of all was the distinct style of their life 3D drawings. "What is this all for?" I wanted to know. "It's just for fun. We are comic nuts. It's even more fun when somebody like you appears out of nowhere and stumbles into our creation. You should have seen your face." The other chap, whose hair covered his ears, now turned towards me with a broad grin. "I am impressed," I said. "How do you do this? We can actually mass produce these guys. Once we have worked out how to use them, they have a sort of limited intelligence of their own, and we project the films we have been working on throughout the town as well. What do you think?" I said that I was really impressed and that I could not fault, in any way, what they had achieved, but that I was puzzled imagining how this was possible. They explained to me that it is all in the imagination, and if you are passionate about your hobby, you'll have no problem creating whatever you want to. Then, out of the blue, one asked me whether I was hungry and nodded towards a conveyor belt coming out of a building with large windows through a hatch. This was very much like I had seen in some London sushi restaurants. "If you don't like any of our food, you can create your own. Just imagine it. It's easier if you actually like it." No sooner had he said that, than I saw a plate moving towards the hatch with a German curry sausage and chips with mayonnaise. I don't know what made me choose this, but perhaps it had more to do with some distant nostalgia to my German student days than with a desire for genuine food. After all, I did not feel hungry in the least. As soon as my plate passed through the hatch, I noticed that I had created a real unappetizing slush, with the chips drowning in ketchup and the sausage hanging limply and unappetizingly over the edge of the plate. When the plate reached me, I picked it up. My two hosts burst out laughing when I picked up a soggy chip between my thumb and forefinger. I thanked the two chaps for the demonstration and indicated that it was time for me to move on. It was difficult though. Somehow I seemed to have lost my motivation when I rose up into the air, conjuring up more elevated feeling that would help me to rise to a higher level. The other thing that interfered with my plans was that I was struggling to retain lucidity. For a few moments I sailed through a sea of colored clouds of light, but then my attention was diverted to my neck, which had assumed a stress position against my crumpled up pillow. Strange non-physical phenomena, the 3rd of May 2010, psychedelic non-physical realities. I woke up early at about 4:30 a.m. and decided to slip into the meditation room for an hour of early morning meditation. I had been in contact with a fellow explorer via email where we were discussing fantasy during the OB state. It had been 2 weeks since my last OB and, not having answered the last email, I thought I needed to get out of my body to gather more material to underpin my theory of dream and fantasy overlays when out of the body. Unfortunately, I started to nod off after about half an hour or so.